All right, welcome to DevOps Dimension. Today, I'm joined by a special guest, Damien. Damien, could you let our folks out here know a little bit of what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Damien Brady. I work as a solution architect for Octopus Deploy, and as you've probably guessed, from Australia. Lately I've been spending a lot of time at conferences around the US and speaking about not just Octopus, but about DevOps practices, especially around deployment automation. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing here.
Yeah, so what I would love to do today is, you know, get more information from you around kind of deployment automation best practices, right?
Sure.
So, you know, you've been dealing with a lot of, and that's what you're living and breathing day in, day out with customers. So, so can you tell us, you know, what are some of the things that are, you know, kind of top of mind on best practices for folks?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things that are kind of important. It's tough to know where to start, I guess. The number one thing when people think DevOps and deployment automation is the automation side, right? Automating everything you can. And it's good because it's a bit addictive. You know, once you start automating something, you go, I could also automate that. You know, the holy grail of this stuff is being able to just write code as a developer or just make changes to your application and just know that it's going to get to production safely every single time and not be a big deal. So the whole idea of production deployments not being a big deal at all is kind of what you're aiming for. So automating everything is a great kind of first step for how to get there, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people they look at all the manual stuff that's there and they're like, oh, well, it works. And you know what, like, you know, what is the motivation perhaps to automate all the things? Like why, yeah. You know, why? Like, why do I need to go about doing all that?
I guess, I mean, everybody's heard the story about the, you know, was it Knight Capital?
Yeah.
With the, you know, deployment, which was, their code worked, was tested really, really thoroughly, everything was fine, but the person doing the deployment just made a mistake and missed one of the 8 machines. And huge, huge problems with that. There's a ton of people who speak about Knight Capital, so I'll kind of leave it there. But that's an example of, if that process was automated, that wouldn't have happened. I mean, the machine doesn't skip a step or forget to do something. It's going to do exactly what you told it. And having all of that stuff automated means that when you press that deploy button or when you check in your code, that continuous deployment process, it's going to do the same thing every single time. So the more you can automate, the more you can kind of trust that the right things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know also just from, I mean, the lean perspective, right? So if you subscribe to the CALMS, the, you know, not just CAMS, but CALMS, a definition of DevOps, right? You know, lean is a thing, and with lean, you know, manual steps and tasks is actually kind of defined as waste because you're sitting there clicking and doing the same thing over and over again. So, you know, when I think about, you know, velocity, if it's not automated, you're now, you know, you want to deploy 10 times a day or whatever it is, like you're now doing that thing, multiply that by however many times you got to do it.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah. And it's not necessarily about, you know, having to deploy, you know, we're not doing DevOps unless we're deploying 35 times a day. Maybe that doesn't really work for your organization, but when you do need to do your deployment, you want to make sure that it actually, you know, is going to work and is going to do the right thing. And a lot of companies, especially when they come to us, they say, we're using Octopus, for example, or we're using some deployment automation tool, and we deploy automatically to dev and test. But when it comes to production, whole different thing. Everybody comes in on a Saturday, there's a Word document that we throw over the fence to the people doing the deployment. And you kind of lose all of the advantages of doing your deployment automation that way. You can deploy to test 25 times a day, but when it comes to production, that's, you know, 3-month deployment window. And really, you're missing out on all of the good stuff you've done to get to test. You know, you can do that in production, and people do that in production. There's countless companies who do this kind of stuff to production, and it's just that kind of fear that, well, production is extra special, we need to treat it differently, that kind of stops a lot of people from getting to that last step, which is a shame, really. Yeah.
Yeah. So, kind of best practice there is, right, just maybe drive that consistency, in whatever that process is, do the same thing in the test as in a QA or stage or all the way up into production.
Yep.
So, you know, like maybe what are some stories or reasons why, you know, you'd want to go about doing that?
Yeah, so, I mean, we hear these kind of stories a lot with people who are doing their automatic deployments to some environments, but production's a big deal. Some of the things that I talk about a lot is the idea of making production not a big deal. And the stories of people who, you know, yeah, we got it to test, it was fine. We got it to staging, it was fine. And we got it to production, everything went wrong. And the reason is that production, because the company has made it a big deal, it's not an automatic process. It's not something you can trust. Even if you trust the rest of your pipeline, production, you know, is a different story. And there's been a lot of times where people have said, the only way to test production properly is to have like a staging or a QA environment that is looks very much the same as production. Mm-hmm. But then they don't carry that over to the deployment. And so they'll make it look like production, but then they deploy their application totally differently. Yeah. And that, you know, that causes problems. Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult to make sure that you know, your application works, that's fine, but it's difficult to make sure that when you deploy it, it's going to, you know, it's going to actually work the way you want it to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not just, I mean, even if you are using infrastructure as code and your environment's pretty much the same, right? I mean, in defined in code, maybe slightly different SKUs or sizes or something, but like you said, though, it's a really good point you make, is that if the environment's the same and the deployment mechanism's different, you now are back to kind of that Knight Capital story of, well, I did it the same way here, or I missed step 56 on the deployment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
and then that just made everything go wrong, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of stuff you really want to avoid. Like, Jeffrey Palermo, you may know, one of the MVPs, ALM MVPs, and he talks a lot about this kind of stuff. He was making a point as well that if a bug gets to production, that's not just a failure in, you know, that code that you wrote, there's a bug in production, that's a bad thing, clearly, but it's also a bad thing for your process. The idea of like the red-green refactor with testing, you know, you've got a bug, so you write a test that shows that the bug fails, and then you fix the bug, and then you write it, and then you run that test and it should be green. You can apply those practices to the deployment process as well. If a bug makes it to production, then you can modify your process to make sure that that bug won't get to production anymore. You know, you can't make that same category of failure next time. So being able to fix the process so, again, you can trust it to go all the way to production. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge advantage in being able to do that with your process, to be so confident that by the time you get to production, you're doing the same thing as you did in these last three environments, and so you just know it's going to work in production. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a worthy goal and something that a lot of companies are a bit afraid of, I think. They're afraid of that last step. You know, it's okay to try this automated stuff in the early environments, but production, yeah, extra special. Mm-hmm. Which is a shame. It's a shame that that's the sticking point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously it takes a while to go from full, I mean, oh, first step, just automate everything. No problem, right? I mean,
sure.
So, yeah. I mean, what do you recommend kind of people to get going?
Yeah, I think, so a lot of the time, doing this, well, not a lot of the time, every time you go down this journey of, you know, trying to get deployment automation working, it's a tough thing to do. It's not as easy as like saying, right, we're going to now deploy our application 25 times a day. You just can't do that, especially with applications that have been around for a while. And maybe the architecture just does not lend itself to doing those continuous deployments consistently like that. So it comes back to thinking about what your application's doing and actually being aware of what needs to happen to get it into the environment. There's no kind of silver bullet with this. You know, it's going to take time and it is hard, but once you start down that path, the benefits, you know, massively outweigh the costs. It's a little bit like we don't have time to write tests. You know, we mm-hmm. just need to write features. We can't write tests. The whole... Mm-hmm. You know, I'm too busy chopping down the tree to go and sharpen my axe mm-hmm. thing. If you spend the time on getting the deployment process automated as well, then it gives you benefits in the long run. It means that, yeah, you get that velocity of deployments. It means if something goes wrong in production, you can roll forward really, really quickly and it's not an issue. Mm-hmm. One of the companies I did some work with, a government organization that I worked with, they had a very, very strict governance process around getting into production. So they did a lot of stuff manually still, but they could deploy to test quickly, they could deploy to staging quite quickly. And they had that common scenario where, you know, one of the DBAs who was running the script to deploy to test had the wrong tab open and ran that script on production, right? So it took, Oof. Like, it happens yeah. a lot. It's not the only place I've been where this has happened. So, you know, this change, this database change happened in production. Now, that's bad, right? It didn't take them long to work out how to fix this, but because of the bureaucracy and because production was a really precious thing, they needed to have a meeting of people and get sign-off to put this fix into production. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 10 seconds to break production, maybe 5 minutes to work out how to fix production, but then 6 hours of downtime while it went through this mm-hmm. bureaucracy and this process. Yeah. If they'd been in a situation where this was all automated and they could trust the deployment through to production, they could have applied that fix and then just let the rest happen and trust that it would have worked.
Or if they really had it fully automated, it wouldn't happen in the first place, because the machine would have pushed to test and then you would have had that problem, right?
Prevention's better than cure, exactly. So they wouldn't have had the issue.
Okay, that makes sense. So, you know, we've been throwing out a lot of numbers. I mean, and this is a hot topic. It feels like when people talk about deployment automation, they think, I want 58 deployments a day. That's our target. Yep. And so tell me, like, what is behind all that? And what's, you know, is that?
Yeah, it's a worthy aim. I mean, I guess the number of deployments you can do a day is more, it's not about, that shouldn't be your target. That should be a reflection of maybe how mature your process is. If you can do 50 deployments a day, then you've probably got quite a good pipeline and a very good, you know, deployment automation pipeline. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing a deployment every 3 months, because that's what the business wants, they only want a release into production every 3 months, that's not a problem either. As long as, you know, doing that release isn't a big deal. It's the problem comes when that 3 month cycle time is a necessity because it's such a problem to get it into production, and it's a scary event.
Yeah.
And that's really what, you know, what drives this. Like, well, we can deploy constantly. We can deploy many times a day.
Yeah, I think I'm just in my experience to this. I mean, I've worked with a number of customers as well, and you know, I think that a lot of customers are surprised at all of the process and all the steps that actually take if they and they're ready to go, right? You know, we do like value stream maps and stuff, and we actually measure what's your lead time, right? Like if you've got that feature ready to go, how long does that thing take to get to production? And I think for a lot of folks, it's surprising, right? I mean, it might not be 3 months, but I've seen in many cases, you're like, whoa, like it takes us a month to just go through all this just to get something out there, right?
And even from a practical point of view, as a programmer, like as a developer who's writing this code, if it takes 3 months for that change that you made to get into production, and then a user reports on this isn't what we wanted, this isn't, you know, we need to change this. You as a developer making that change, that was 3 months ago. Like I had no idea what I don't know the code I wrote yesterday.
Yeah.
So coming back to that at the same time, that has an impact based on velocity as well.
Like absolutely.
The faster you can make these changes, the better you are.
Like,
you're already, you know, kind of in that mindset, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well yeah, in the lean world, I mean that's like task switching, right?
Yeah,
task switching
absolutely.
Is a form of waste in software delivery. So you know, the faster you can get that feedback, you know, the quicker you're able to fix and innovate and do things, because it's not only about fixes, right? But it's about, you know, satisfying your users. I mean, that's one of the overall goals of DevOps, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, like, it's like faster deployment where you're not, you know, equals users get data, you know, or value faster that you can actually react to faster, right? In that whole picture.
And one of the comments I keep making is that, if you have code and it's not in production, then you may as well have not started it. The whole, you know, remember the whole kind of programmer being hit by the bus thing. It's the same kind of thing. If your entire team, let's say something happens and your entire team gets pulled off a project and they have a ton of work that's in the pipeline that's not in production, from the user's point of view, you haven't done anything. You've done 0% of this thing that we've asked for. And that's where Agile and Lean has kind of geared us towards doing deployable packages and, you know, what's the term? Potentially shippable increments or something.
Yeah.
So, but if that doesn't make it to production, then it's pointless.
Yeah. Right? And I talk with folks and I'm like, if you're really awesome at Agile, then guess what? Unless your ops people are just as, if not more Agile, they're going to be pissed because you're just piling up stuff there. Or maybe you don't care and you do 2 week sprints, but you ship every 3 months, right? Like whatever. Like it doesn't just because you're awesome Agile doesn't really help the bigger picture, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's the whole DevOps thing, right?
Right.
It's
the end to end.
It's end to end. It's your application does not stop when you click commit or push.
Right.
or right. check in.
Yeah, it's part of the picture. Yeah. So there's, you know, I think maybe it would be good to kind of shift gears this tad from best practices to maybe like, you know, what are some things that you hear on excuses? Like, you know, I can't do this best practice thing that you just talked to me, right? I can't automate the things. I can't keep consistency with my environment. I can't work on, you know, deploying more quickly and rolling forward and these types of things.
Yeah,
what absolutely. Do you hear?
We hear lots and lots of things. The first one that comes up usually is the database. And that's kind of the sacred cow of, you know,
But I have a database,
yeah,
so
exactly.
I can't go fast.
Exactly.
So throw my hands up, I'm done.
Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. And I mean, with everything, you know, maybe that's a lot harder, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. Yeah, you know, there are people doing it. There's lots and lots of people doing it, and there's some awesome tools out there. You know, the Redgate tools, for example, ReadyRoll and the DLM stuff as well that they've got.
Yeah. SQL Server Data Toolkit,
SQL
SSDT.
Server data. Yep, exactly. You know, DAC packs and things like that.
Yep.
That can give you a nice way of automating these kind of deployments as well. So yeah, it's a harder thing. A lot of the time, that comes down to a cultural thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like the databases is this protected kind of. We really need to be careful about how those change, and we can't just change a database the same way we can change an application. And they're right, you can't necessarily just do that, but
you can apply the same practices, right?
You can't
change it in the same technical way.
Absolutely.
But you can apply the same check in a SQL script or something that modifies the database or schema, and that's version controlled and it gets automated, pushed out to everywhere.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
And the other one we get is the rollback scenario.
Okay.
You know, if we've pushed out a change, you know, sure, we can roll back our code, but how do we roll back our database? You know, people have written records to this new schema. How do we roll back from that if we need to, if something goes wrong? And again, it's a hard problem, but the idea of something like transitional deployments, so rather than changing your date of birth column, which somebody thought was a good idea to put as a string, rather than just changing that into a date time, for example, or just a date, you add that as a new column, as a date, and you maintain both for a little while until you're confident that the change is fine, and then subsequently you remove that. You clean up that technical debt.
Yep.
And that gives you a way of rolling back or kind of backing out, or, you know, it gives you some surety around it. And that comes down to being aware of, you know, and actually thinking about what's required to do this stuff safely. And yeah, it's hard. There's no silver bullet.
But yeah, applying a DevOps mindset to database, very possible. People do it.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't be an excuse for you out there.
Yeah, that's right.
So don't be that guy. Otherwise, we're pointing you to this video right here.
That's right. Yep.
What else do you hear?
We hear a lot of change management process things, especially with the larger organizations. Things like, well, no, when we go to production, that needs to be signed off by 25 people. And that's, you know, in some organizations, that's, you know, that's probably perfectly fine. Like all of the ones who have, you know, your PCI and SOX compliance and all of those, you know, really highly, you know, governance kind of organizations, they often have those scenarios. But that doesn't mean that you can't apply the DevOps practices and deployment automation best practices to get yourself to a point where, yep, we've got the 25 signatures, hit a button, and the rest just happens.
Yeah.
Right? And again, that's a cultural thing. It's it's not stopping you from technically doing the work, but it's, you know, it's a bit of a barrier.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think it's eye-opening, at least in my experience, when you see customers who you're like, if you have all of these things working together, right? If you're really doing continuous delivery and you've got the continuous integration, continuous deployment, release management pipeline, automated testing, all these things working together, and like, it's like you can still feel good and approve it, and have an approval button to the 25 people or whatever majority, and they click the approve button, but at least it's automated, it's informed, it's not a committee, it's not 6 hours of waiting.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you know, you may just say, well, we automate all the way until that last step. And even at that, it's much easier to hit the approve button.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you've got a good deployment process, then you just know that that's going to work, you know, and that becomes the only thing. We need to get that guy to approve it and push the button. But apart from that, we're good. We don't need to come in on a Saturday and, you know, do it when nobody's using the application, things like that.
Yeah.
And most of the other stuff comes around, it's too hard for us to do this, or I can't imagine how we could possibly automate this step. Those are the other ones we hear, and again, that comes down to, well, it is going to be hard. Nobody well, I guess maybe there's been one or two occasions, but nobody's going to take their 20-year-old legacy application and say, right, well, let's just make that automatically deploy 25 times a day. The architecture of the application might just prevent you from doing that. So you've got to probably do some work to get it into a state where it is automatically deployable.
So that's one excuse that is legitimate, but not illegitimate in that you just throw your hands up and don't even try.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's that, hey, like, look, like, we need to actually do something about our architecture. And then there's, you know, things like strangler pattern approaches and other ways to, you know, start to break apart the beast of the the monolith, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so you can start to kind of apply the practices to at least a subset of that.
Yeah. Another good technique for getting over those barriers is if you have steps that you genuinely think, I cannot understand how we can automate this item, then make that bit of manual process. Have a deployment process that stops at certain points and say, yeah, now we need to do that thing that we haven't worked out how to automate.
Right.
Do that task, okay, now we can continue.
Yeah.
And slowly eat away at all those hard tasks, because, you know, some of them may be trivial. Some of those steps that you take to deploy your application may be trivial, and some of them may be horribly difficult to do. So make them manual, but automate the stuff you can, and slowly you'll chip away at those hard bits. It's kind of a practical way of moving forward in the right direction. Yeah.
Makes so, total sense.
Yeah, that's one of the recommendations we often give. Just start. You know, if you don't start, then it's the longest task ever, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things too, you know, like with minimizing risk, going to production, doing like testing in production and things like that, where you deploy to 1% of the users and, you know, or whatever, right?
Absolutely,
And that helps, you know, the manager be not, or the boss people be concerned to hit the approve because they know that, hey, we're only going to impact the small subset of people or internal dog food or, you know, users to this thing first, right?
Exactly right. And like maybe the ideal scenario, what would be fantastic is if you could get an automated pipeline that does enough testing that you know that you are not going to break something if it goes to production. But all of the features that you do, all of the features that you write and the changes that you make, they can just be feature flags and feature flag turned off. So it goes to production, it's physically in production, but you just flick it on for yourself maybe as a first step and say, yeah, this all looks okay, let's just slowly ramp it up to a couple of users like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And when we're confident, we can just push this even further. This actually works really well for those organizations that say, no, we have a 3-month deployment cycle. We can only do a release every 3 months because our customers will not accept us doing daily releases. Mm-hmm. You can still do daily releases, just keep everything turned off. And then when that 3-month deployment time comes out, you guys just flick a switch and everything lights up. And not only that, everything lights up, but you've already tested it in production.
Right. Yeah, you actually can turn on that flag for yourself in production and go like try and use it and see how it's working. And then you know, you're actually really doing testing production in a different way.
Yeah.
Not the real customer.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. It's the good type of testing in production.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an awesome aim that you can get to as well if you start looking at that stuff. And that's like a further down the maturity.
Right.
Pipeline,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, good aims to have.
But. Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, so one of the things I hear from you is, you know, trying to tackle the automate the things, right, is we'll automate what you can and then break that up into the manual steps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I think that really helps with is determining where your biggest manual bottlenecks and delays are, right? Because, you you could start with, okay, well, we have a ton of manual stuff. If you measure that and that all goes through a pipeline, you now know, well, this thing is our biggest hurdle, right?
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
You can start to tackle that and knock it down, right?
Yeah, definitely. And that may prompt kind of a reevaluation of, well, this bit we're doing right here, this is really hard, this is taking us a lot of time. Maybe we're not doing that part correctly. Maybe there's some other way we can do it that's more trustworthy and safer. So it gives you the ability to kind of introspect on the process, the deployment process, and maybe even the architecture of your application. If something is really hard to deploy, then maybe it's not the right way to do it. Yeah. Very similar to testing again. You know, if something is really hard to test, then maybe you haven't written it the best way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't write a test to verify that a piece of code does what you think it is going to do, then that's probably not the best piece of code.
Doesn't sound very good.
No, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
So a similar thing with the process, I think, is worthwhile looking at. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Do you have any kind of final recommendations on, you know, resources or places to go to kind of learn more about best practices and such?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of stuff out there. I did a talk at NDC London in January this year, and that's up on Vimeo. So you can have a look at that, or if you just did a search for NDC London and my name as well, that video will come up. There's some other talks coming up. KCDC, I think I'm at doing a few things like that. And then start to look at blogs, especially like blogs and video series, like the DevOps Dimension stuff's fantastic resource for this kind of thing. You know, podcasts, there's countless ones of these these resources. It's kind of the, like DevOps is kind of the, you know, term du jour at the moment. So there's no shortage of
DevOps content. I know, like at least from my perspective, you know, there's the DevOps Fundamental series, and so you know that works through continuous integration, continuous deployment, release management. Donovan Brown and I did a course on the Visual Studio Team Services build and release management. So you know, tons of content that can help you on that. And if you're still watching this right now, there's another video that you can go watch out that actually shows how to implement some of these best practices using Octopus Deploy and VSTS.
Yeah, so, that's right. So a lot of the principles around, a lot of the principles we've been talking about are things that Octopus encourages. Like they want you to, we want you to do it the right way. And so yeah, it's that video is useful for just seeing, you know, how
yeah, specific flavor
together
of how to do that, and there's all kinds of ways. So really, everything you've heard, right, should be able to be applied to, you know, whatever tool or product or solution you decide you want to use here. So
yeah,
you know, that's part of the DevOps Dimension, spirit of DevOps Dimension here. You know, trying to help everybody out no matter what kind of tools you're using. So all right, thank you so much, Damien,
no
for your time. Awesome.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah.
Cheers.